Good evening. It's September 13th, and it is 9:02 Eastern Time, and this is the discussion call. It's an open discussion where anyone's eligible to state their opinions, thoughts, research, whatever they have. Bear in mind that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the National Liberty Alliance, but represent those of the speaker. And with that, would anyone like to open with anything new and different that's happening out there? Well, in that case, I might toss something in to the hat. There is a firm rumor going around, and it is a rumor from Q, that everything is coming down between now and November 6th. In other words, before the election. The National Guard will be activated soon in preparation. Groups like Soros's Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and the Nazis will be taken out before they can protest. Mueller will exonerate POTUS. Not known if Mueller will be in handcuffs when he does that. All those who have been role-playing will stand up as good guys. Sessions will be one of those standing up, and that's been a very big question for a long time. By November 6th, all the deep state and black hats should be gone, but not forgotten. And that's about all I have to say for the evening. And if that doesn't evoke any comment, then you're all asleep.
Been trying to get back around. I've been trying to get back around to the thing. I saw this thing from Jim. Did you see Jim pass this thing on about the grand jury? Did he give it to you from New York?
Jim Pearson?
Yes.
No, I didn't see that. What does it say?
It's about how to get, it's the basis for common law grand jury rules, and I've never seen it before, and so I started going through it, and sounds pretty good, but I haven't gotten there yet. I haven't finished reading it yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Enforced judicial order. All current sheriffs will be removed from the proceeding and replaced by continental sheriffs. So that strikes me as there is no continental sheriff. I thought we called the
continental or constitutional.
Continental.
Do we have any continental sheriffs?
Not to my knowledge.
What is a continental sheriff?
I have no idea. It doesn't say.
Nor do I.
And it has a website in there. Where's the website? I don't see the website. F4A indictment, Kevin Spacey, private lobbyist for gold human trafficking. That PDF is what he gave me.
And I ran across
applicable laws. Go ahead.
This is kind of a different topic, but there's a good video out. It talks about pursuing truth, and it talks about all the different war games that were going on during 9/11. They had some 22 targets that they thought were hijacked because the military was putting fake targets in here and there randomly on different areas of the country, which tied up basically all of the fighters. And they didn't know where to go anyway, but it's about an hour long. It's well worth watching. And there's interviews with a bunch of the military and, for example, the generals that testified before the 9/11 commission who lied repeatedly. And it shows how, you know, they said that all of this additional, trials that were going on, simulations, helped the process rather than hindered it, and where it was obvious to anybody that looked at it that there were maybe in reality 3 planes involved and yet they were 22 targets. Well, I'm not sure how he could ever say that helped anything. But I put it in a newsletter for this week. You can take a look at it if you like. All the war games. And I've talked about the ones in Britain too.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before.
The ones in Britain where they had 2 stations, railroad stations, where the bombs went off, and they claimed that somebody carried them on. Put them in a train, a car, left in there and left. And of course, when they looked at the damage, that was the bomb had been underneath the car and had blown up through the floor rather than on top of the floor and blowing down. So that was obviously, you know, wasn't anybody wandering on the train and leaving them a bomb. The whole thing is so ludicrous. You just can't believe that anyone would buy what they've been putting out. And there's a number of new ones, too, on the damage to the buildings and the fact that it was a type of nuclear device that did it, which accounts for everything just disintegrating and disappearing for both buildings. And a lot of the stuff's being reiterated too on the 9/11 where the buildings were condemned and were to be either repaired or tore down. They had asbestos in them from top to bottom, which had to be removed, which is an extremely expensive process, which made the buildings almost unsaleable unless you wanted to use them for a 9/11 type event. They were ideally suited for that because they got rid of everything all at once and they had double indemnity on it and collected twice.
Hold on.
So, but there is a list out, and I don't recall who all is on it. In terms of our politicians and presidents that are to be included in this next roundup before the election. If that happens, I think the election will be a little bit one-sided. If not, it will probably be closer, which would be unfortunate.
Unless you get some backlash from the Democrats and everybody says, oh, they're just making all this up and everybody votes Democrat.
Well, they'll have to go talk
Who
to their
knows?
Friends in jail.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of backlash from the Democrats, you know. And what else would you expect the way they've been carrying on like a bunch of lunatics?
Yeah, Q says repeatedly that these people are stupid.
Yep. Yeah, they think they're getting away with things when in fact they're not. Don't realize that people are a little brighter than they give them credit for. So I'll open up the floor again for questions.
Jim, why don't you tell us about this document that you sent me?
By golly, you're here, Jim.
Yeah, he's here now, but he's muted. Star 6. Okay. There he is.
Oh, that's another... I just unmuted Jim.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about that.
Not you, Jim. New York Jim.
It's okay, James, in New Mexico. Jim, do you want to say anything? Believe it or not, I'm having a hard time hearing you, Jim. I don't know what it is.
Really? Well, I look and I see that there isn't that much volume on my mic tonight.
Oh, now you're sounding better. Whatever you did just now, that helped.
Just move the mic a little bit. I'm traveling, son. Yeah, I'm using a different headset and everything, so not familiar with this one.
Last week, Dick in Illinois told us a bunch of his history, and we appreciated that, Dick. Is there anybody who feels like they didn't get to talk last week that'd like to talk now? Now is the time to unmute yourself and come on in and say something.
Just one idle comment. I've spent the last week and a half wandering around the, I guess you'd call it the upper northwest, west, and I saw two itty-bitty chemtrails, and that was it.
Yeah.
Out in...
Itty-bitty chemtrails, huh?
Yep, they're just little ones, and they were a little bit more persistent than a contrail, but not much, and then they went away. And that was in Wyoming. And pretty much across the street, didn't see any. I haven't seen any in Iowa. I'm going across there. So either they're going after the population centers in earnest. I guess they've got to feed the hurricane. And or they're getting slowed down and, you know, hopefully coming to an end of their chicanery here, spraying everybody, which would be a good thing. We don't need any more of that. Lately, I've been reading that they're putting some pandemic stuff in some of these aerosols they're dumping on people with the hopes of getting things going. I think they had four different possible pandemics come into the U.S. I think two or three were in Philadelphia. I forget where the others came into. They came in by plane from overseas, and the people tested positive. So they're back to playing their old game of trying to start a pandemic if they can. So far it's not working. I think one or two of the flights came from England. I forget where the others came from. One of them was some really strange disease, monkey pod disease or monkey disease, which is I think usually fatal. But so far that hadn't taken off and gone anywhere.
The floor is open. Anybody can say anything they want.
You were asking about Dick Clifton Fury. Here he is.
yep.
Things are really taking place here. Go ahead. Things are really taking place here.
That's all you're going to say. So my apologies.
Things are really taking place here in Peoria.
I will shut up.
Fourth time's a charm, Dick.
How's that, Fred? Or Dick?
Well, front page of Peoria, we have, quote-unquote, a new coroner, and he appeared to be gay, and it's got a big half page picture of he and his husband. I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being praised. He adopted a little black boy. I thought that was interesting. And then they're talking about he's getting a big award for the things that he has done for Peoria and the entire county. I don't think there's any reason to flaunt these people being gay, but also on the television, you know, you see a lot of guys, and they appear to be gay also. The Peoria Journal-Star, which was a local newspaper, which was actually combined, one was a journal and one was a star, and the Star was a morning paper and the Journal was the afternoon paper, and they merged that. That eliminated one of the competition. It was still fairly good. Now it has been sold out, and they're getting rid of all of the local reporters and forcing them out, and they're coming out of Springfield. I thought that was interesting. People don't know that when they, I'm going back to the 1940s, in the 40s, they had laws, I'll call them, that no media could have more than one type and one piece of the pie to keep anybody from controlling it. And these guys are buying up all the things that they can buy up, if that's what you want to call it, but they're just, I think they're just stealing it, so that they can control the media that's being put out there. It is just nothing but one big mess. But that is... I could go on and on but about the stuff happening in pure Peoria, and none of it is any good.
How does it feel to be a leader, huh?
A leader with no power.
Yep.
That's what I've been most of my life.
I tell you, I was looking at the, well, it'd be TV news, six companies own and control it, and then they were going through on the video, and they must have gone through a dozen news reports for one specific evening, and they all read the same exact script. They didn't deviate one iota.
Exactly.
And of course that's all legitimate and legal now, and they can tell you anything they want because propaganda is now legal according to the government. The latest, well, I guess it was a year ago, they passed a law making it legal. After all, we don't want to have the truth get out anywhere readily. And, you know, we used to have news commentators used to commentate on the news, but now our news reporters, now they just comment, and they can comment any way they see fit. I mean, we used to have things like for political, you know, comments if and advertisements if... during election time, if one party was running a big ad, they had to give equal time to the other and all that sort of thing. But they've gotten rid of all those safeguards now, so they can pretty much feed us mush any day of the week that they want to.
Well, another thing that they've...
Smith Mudd's asked.
Go ahead. Another thing
that... I just want to say that's the Smith Mudd Act.
Smith Mudd Act, is it? Okay.
Go ahead, Dick. Yeah.
Back in the 40s, you had restrictions of being able to be put on the ballot. You had to have your residence. You had to be there so long. You had to be such age, and there was a time limit on what you could do. And then you went out, and you had to go back to work and to earn your own living. There was no such thing as retirement. Now they've got all these guys on retirement. and I'm just going to use the area code, and I'm going to use picture numbers that just strike me right now. When I was on in 1960, 58, 59, and 60, there were 35 people total in the Peoria County Sheriff's Department. They had four automobiles. One was permanently assigned to the sheriff, and three were used for the deputies. Okay, now two of them were used. We had a north side and a south side, and that's how we split up the county. There's 725 miles in this county. We, as deputies, were all equal. There were no sergeants, lieutenants, captains, and so forth. There was no retirement unless you paid into it. We got paid a whole $10 a day. Now that's a day, not on an hourly basis. Out of that $10, we had to buy our own guns, our own leather, our own uniforms, everything was out of our pocket, not the county's. Now they got, I know it's over 150 deputies here in Peoria, each with their own vehicle furnished by the county taxpayers. They are paramilitary. They're down on my grandfather's old farm using the firing range down there, and I'm sitting here on the golf course, and I can hear them down there all the time. They're firing different types of weapons, machine guns especially. Then they want to know why they're so deep in debt. Well, they've got all these retirement payments that they're supposed to be paying for retirement. They're buying all of these uniforms for the deputies. We had to buy our own. The cars we had were leased. They're buying these vehicles. They're getting the X vehicles off of the federal government and other equipment. Now, wait a minute. What is wrong with this whole picture? It's no wonder that they think that they're God. They can get away with anything. And I'm sure if you've been watching television, they said about this girl that shot the neighbor who was black and she was white. And he was on the fourth floor and she was on the third floor. And she thought he was in her apartment. Oh, wait a minute. Something is just directly wrong. But they think they're God. They can get away with anything. And I'll go a bit farther than that. The taxpayers here in Peoria quote-unquote financed the sale of what had been the largest hotel in the city of Peoria. They tore down the second largest one and put a civic center there. Then they came along and they built a couple others, all the taxpayers' expense. But on this particular hotel, the guy who was quote-unquote managing the sale of this thing, he was supposedly buying it, and he was trying to push it through. He formed several, I don't know how many, but he formed several corporations, and he kept defaulting in his end of the contract. Okay, now he's got these contracts out there, and he came back and he got more money from the city. So they tore down where our music store used to be, which was right next to the hotel, and they built a four-story section, more modern, and they were going to rent out the first floor. They haven't been able to rent their first floor. Second floor, they can't rent out because they don't have a contract with the hotel that they originally had the contract with because of the default in the contract. So it was repossessed. This guy monkeyed around, and he's making money out of everything he does. He's making money, putting them in his pocket. And the taxpayers are losing it all. They've lost over $7 million from this contract, which the city says, it's all right. It'll work out. How can it work out when you keep going deeper and deeper and deeper in debt because the taxpayers are unknowingly supporting it all? Then they're stealing the taxpayers' properties, as they've stolen mine. They stole my piece of property for the baseball diamond down there, and that was back in 1970, if I remember right. I have not received a penny for it. The guy in back of me had a little dry cleaning business there, and he had his son-in-law in an what he was using for his office, and he was a lawyer. He was, his mother married the guy that was running his cleaners. Well, I knew about the cleaners, and the way that got around is that had been a prostitution, a house of prostitution. It belonged to this kid's dad. His dad, whom I knew, did not live with the family. He's got a mistress he's living with, and he's handicapped. I won't go into the how he's handicapped. But I will say this, when I went to that guy when I was on the county and I told him what had to be done, he said, okay, I'll take care of it tomorrow. And he said at 8 o'clock in the morning he'd be there, and 8 o'clock he was there, and he took care of it. Now, these kids were playing these games, and they were using their dad's background, let's put it that way. And all this stuff is taking place. Well, they gave this kid $1 million for his dry cleaning business. They gave the son-in-law, I think it was $150,000 for legal fees. They gave the son of this kid $150,000 for interrupting his source of income. Then they moved him and built a new building for him, clear out north of town, which they're still running the dry cleaning business out there. I don't know what else is going on, but that was all paid for by the taxpayers. I have not received one penny from it, which is neither here nor there. But this stuff is just boiling and boiling and boiling, and all these politicians say, oh, it's all right. Unfortunately, that's what's happened throughout this entire nation. I was reading, my oldest son brought me some old Time magazines. In 1944, there was a big article about Chicago. And Mayor Kelly, and he had 57 committeemen who helped him run that city. People have no idea how corrupt it was. Well, in 1944, I was still going up there because my grandfather was a lawyer up there. He was in with one of the biggest I'll say corrupt lawyers. They were handling all of the show people because Chicago had been the original entertainment location in the world. Then they moved out to California. But when they moved out to California, that's when Ronald Reagan was still a grade B or grade C movie actor. But he was, at that time, the head of the Screen Actor Guild. Now, Ron Reagan was all right. I can go on how I met Ron Reagan. But he was trying to do things the right way. Well, when my grandfather's partner, who had a kid brother who had been a United States senator who didn't have brains enough to blow his nose, every time anything had come up that he had to vote on, he'd call his brother and ask him, how should I vote? And his brother would tell him how to vote. And then he'd say, well, my car's wearing out, and I need a new car, and I can't afford it. So he'd say, go down and buy the car and put it in my name. Well, now, that's all fine in that family. But when he would go out and he was doing contracts, he was doing contracts for, quote, unquote, the city or county or state or federal, and if he was representing them, he would have his little game that he played so that he could control everything that happened in those contracts. If he was representing the union, he played the same game, but he always left the hole open so that the corporation won the game and the union came out second best. He would go out with his union members and he'd take them out for coffee or lunch or whatever, and he would always pay the bill. Now, this is the part that was really interesting. When he went out with his wife with him, his wife would always remain behind, and he'd leave a big tip on the table. And she'd say, oh, I forgot something. And she'd go back and get whatever she supposedly forgot, and she'd pick up that tip. The waitresses hated him. And I thought that was interesting. Okay, well, when Ron Reagan got promoted, quote-unquote, through this guy to be the governor of California.
What happened?
It worked out well. When he wanted to be the governor, Sidney Korshak took over as the head of the Screen Actors Guild. Now, I don't know if that name means anything to anybody here, but he was powerful. He had the law office in Chicago, and he took the kid brother in as a partner, and he had a woman in the office. Her name was Mary Oppenheim. And I asked my grandfather, I said, why did she drop the last two letters off her name? He looked at me kind of funny and said, what do you mean? I said, her name is Oppenheimer. She dropped the E-R off of the name. She's still married to her husband, and I know that she's been in this office at least 20 years and not living with her husband because he's down in Florida. I said, the reason he's down there is because he can control that area. He's also controlling Cuba, and he's she's up here controlling this area. I told my grandfather at that time, watch your accounts, because she is the office manager. He said, oh, they're all right. Well, he told me later, he said, I was walking down the street, and he said, one of my clients came up to me and said, Tom, he said, I hate to say this, but he said, I hate that you're so busy you can't take my, handle my case anymore. He said, what do you mean? He said, well, I called to make appointments to see you on several different occasions, and Ms. Oppenheim sends me to other lawyers, not in that office. And that's when he opened his eyes, and he started looking around. He said, well, I noticed that my clientele was dropping off, but he said, I didn't know why. Well, if she's spending this off, she's taking the money from this. My grandfather got nothing out of it. And then finally, they built that new Thompson building up there. He said, well, I'm going to go over and see how much room I'm going to have in this Thompson building. And she said, well, that's not necessary because you're not going. Interesting. Forcing him right out of the office. Okay. So that broke, well, I missed the part. No, I said the part about where Sydney went out to California, I believe. But while he was out there, he started into the movie business, and then he decided that he bought a hotel over in Las Vegas. Well, my grandfather told me, he said, well, I'll give you a letter of introduction to him. I said, I don't want that letter. And he said, well, he said, maybe you'll end up in movies. I said, I don't want it that way. Anyhow, I got out to Las Vegas, and I started asking around. Funny, nobody knew who he was. Now, he owns a hotel out there, and he's managing a lot of the stuff that's going on in Las Vegas. Yet nobody knew who he was. I thought that was interesting. Anyhow, that's the kind of games that are being played, and they've been played for a long time. Okay, now, when I went to the pilot training in the Air Force, I went in, and the man who was, I'll say, somewhat behind me, was in the spot to take over the Tactical Air Command. His name was Bill Cosby. And it was, that's not the actor. Bill was a heck of a good guy. He was a wingman for Bill O'Connell. They named McConnell Air Force Base after him. There's a whole story to go with him, but I'll leave that go. I learned how, well, Bill Cosby lived a block and a half away from where I was living at the time with my parents. I was 22 at that time. I had tried to get into the Air Force when I was 19. I passed the test. There were only two of us that took the test at the same time down at, can't even think of the name of the Air Force base. It was here in Illinois. Anyhow, the kid that went down, rode it down with me. He sat at one end of the room, and I sat at the other end of the room. The room's about 24 feet long. And the only mirror, and it was a two-way window, a two-way mirror, or one-way mirror, so it's a mirror when we're looking at it, but they're looking through and they can see what's going on with us. And they watched us the entire time taking these tests. Well, there was no way I could see what he was doing because, like I say, he was 24 feet away and he had his back to me. And the only way I found that out is a kid that was working the desk down there was originally from Pekin, which is 12 miles away from here. And when he found out where I was from, he became very friendly. So we're standing there shooting the bull, and there's two stacks of personnel files on his desk. Now, at that particular time, I'd already been in the Air National Guard for 5 years, so I had been around a while. While I'm standing there talking to him, I noticed that these two stacks, one's got a big red MI and the other's got a big PI on it. So I asked him, I said, I had never seen this before. He said, well, those are all second lieutenants. They've been in for 2 years and they have never been promoted. He said, the only way they're going to get promoted is because they've got much military influence or political influence. The only way they're going to get an advancement is if they get back under the person that they got that influence with, and they can go through and remove all that stuff off of their files. Okay, so that told me something there. Anyhow, I went after that. At that particular time, I was, this is before I went into pilot training. I was the head of the crash crew. And we went on a gunner mission up in Michigan. We were going out because they were going to have air-to-ground gunnery, and we had to be there to score the targets, clean up the mess, and make sure everything was ready for the next group when they came up. Well, it so happened that while just before we got there, there was a fellow flying F-51 or P-51, if they called them at that time, and he was coming in for a landing. When he was coming in for a landing, he said, something caught his eye out of his, on the right side of his wing, and he said, I looked over, and he said, there's a dish-like vehicle flying right on his wing. He said, I looked up, and he said, the pilot saluted me, and he just went straight up. He said, I had never seen anything move so fast. He said, so I decided I was going to see what was going on. And this came off the transcript to the tower, because he's talking to the tower when all this is taking place. And they said, all of a sudden, they said nothing, saw nothing but an explosion, and his plane evaporated. There was never anything said about any of that. I don't think I'd ever hit any of the newspapers or anything else. Okay, enough of that story. Going back to Bill Cosby, my car broke down, and since he only lived a block away, I asked him, I said, sir, may I ask you for a ride out to the base? He said, you certainly may. He said, I'll pick you up in the morning. Well, we were waiting for a nationwide activity from all the National Guard units. And that was about to happen at any time. And I went out and the city was just beautiful. I said, well, it looks like we'll have that activity today. He said, no. He said, I checked the weather. He said, two-thirds of the nation's got bad weather, so it won't be today. That told me something. So next day I went out. I said, well, today is going to be the day. Could be. It wasn't 15 minutes later that activity took place. Okay, now he told me when he was a young second lieutenant, he had to fly into a base out in Nevada. He said, when I flew into this base, he said, I took care of everything that had to be done to close out my flight line. And he said, I looked over at the hangar, and he said, the hangar doors are wide open. He said, there's nobody around it except for the people inside of it. He said, there's a dish shaped saucer in there, and there were three bodies on the floor and one walking around. He said, these bodies were about the size of a fifth or sixth grade child. He said, when I saw that, he said, I wanted to get over and get a better look at it. And he said, the AP there said, sir, don't take another step. My orders are shoot to kill. And he said, I stopped right then. He said, I turned around and walked away. Well, that told me that he saw these quote-unquote foreign visitors, I'll put it that way. Well, anyhow, making a small story short, I watched them pin his eagles on his shoulders. We were up in Michigan again. And what took place there as far as we were concerned, I didn't realize he was watching us. We were watching him. Anyhow, that's when I found out that what he had, everything he had told me was 100% true. When I was in pilot training, and I don't know why it happened, but first of all, I was in two different squadrons. I was in the Bluebirds and I was in the Redbirds. When I was in the Bluebirds, I was right up to the graduation day, and we took the test, and I was given word that I was to move over into the headquarter barracks. Well, the kid who was ahead of the squadron was a heck of a nice kid, and he was in the bed next to me. I went to bed that night, and we'd been talking, and he was supposed to graduate the next morning. I woke up, his bed's all wrapped up. He's not anywhere to be seen. So I had to go get some stuff because I was going over to the Redbirds. When I got over to the Redbirds, I thought, well, I better go get this so I'm not going to have to worry about that for another month. Anyhow, when I got over there, I went to the PX, and here's Roger standing there, and he's in nothing but a pair of fatigues. No uniform, nothing of any identification. And I asked him, I said, what's going on, Raj? He said, didn't you hear or see anything last night? I said, no. I said, I really wasn't sleeping the best because what was taking place with me. But he said, well, I was wondering if anybody heard or saw anything. He said, I was sound asleep. And he said, all of a sudden, he said, there's somebody grabbing each one of my arms and each one of my legs, and the guy standing behind me pushed something over my mouth so I couldn't make any noise. And they hauled me out of the barracks. And he said, I don't know how far we were away, but he said, that was the first time they let me loose. And he said, what's going on? And they said, well, we decided that you're risk because your grandmother joined a union back in 1933 or 34, and she signed a list to become a communist. I thought, that's interesting. Well, I never saw Roger again, but I often wondered what happened to him. Then I got into the Redbirds, and I found out that I had the highest scores in my entire squadron, except in one can't think what I want to call it. One subject. And I was 0.2 of a point under the minimum score that they had. And they held me back for that. So I thought, well, I'll play it out. I went through that place like it was a house on fire. No problem at all. Graduated top of the class. And I was moved down to Moultrie, Georgia. Well, down in Moultrie, Georgia, you had to get 50 flying hours in before. And if you didn't pass for some reason, you got washed out. Well, I'd already flown C-47s and T-6s, and not legitimately, but I had flown them. Anyhow, I knew that there was no problem with the flying end of it. Well, my instructor turned out to be the safety instructor. He had been, or he still was, a naval commander. He was a pretty nice guy, but he could chew. And he started chewing from the first time he saw any. There were four of us in his flight. I was the oldest. And he started chewing, and I just turned him off. I mean, I listened to what he was saying, but I didn't pay attention to anything, you know, that could affect me. Well, you couldn't fly if the clouds were so low, and you had to wait for them to raise up high enough that you could fly under them. And then you did not go above those clouds unless you found a hole and you could go up through that hole so you could see what was up there. The table right next to me are four student officers. This one kid, his daddy had airplanes and he already knew how to fly. His instructor was a heck of a nice guy. And my elbow was almost touching his. I mean, there were several times that different people that I had mentioned here that I was that close to, and I could hear everything that was being said or everything that was going on. And he said they're laughing about what he did to this guy. And he said, well, yesterday, he said, I was flying along, and he said, my instructor just told me to go ahead and put your time in. I'm going to sit back here and relax. And he said, I looked in the mirror, and I saw him undo his seatbelt. He opened up the canopy, and he said he just leaned back and closed his eyes. Okay, now the next part of this, he's telling what had happened. He said, when I saw him close his eyes, he said, I rolled the plane and dumped him out. the instructor said, you know, he said, I was really relaxed. And he said, I just felt like I was floating through the air. He said, I opened my eyes. He said, I saw the plane flying away. He said, I looked down at the ground coming up. And he said, I pulled my chute, and they came out and picked me up. I had to wash that guy out right then. We went up that day, and I wasn't in the air, I'll say 5 minutes. And I hear, mayday, 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 mid-air collision. My instructor said, do you know where that's at? I said, yes, sir. He said, fly me to it. So I flew him over, and I'm circling the accident. The dust is coming up. I could see the plane had just barely hit the ground. And I said, I don't see any activity, but the plane doesn't look too bad. He said, put your wing on it and fly in a circle on it. I flew that way for 4 hours. That 4 hours was going against me. I didn't think it would, but it did. Anyhow, when I'm reassigned, when I went back the next morning, my three wingmen, or my three others in my flying party said, we're scared to death. We're going to get washed out. And I said, well, would you like me to speak to the instructor? And he said, yes, will you? I said, certainly. I said, so I walked out on the flight line. I said, sir, may I speak to you man to man? He said, yes, you may. So I told him, I said, these three guys are all scared to death. And I said, none of us are sold. I don't understand, but I said, you must have your reason. But I said, not one of us are sold. And they're all scared they're going to get washed out. And I said, I think that if you would let up a little bit, not, I said, you're the world's worst or best to chew out. If you would let up on them, I think you'll see a big difference in their flying. Well, I never heard what happened because he said, well, I'm assigning you a new instructor. I said, I don't want another instructor. I said, I'm satisfied with you. He said, no. He said, I've decided I'm going to assign a different instructor. Luckily, I got the man who was flying the plane that was hit by the two that were killed in that plane a couple days before. He flew with me about 15 minutes. He said, why hasn't he soloed you? I said, well, all I can figure is he's scared to death that he's going to have the same thing happen to one of his men, and he doesn't want that to happen. And he'd rather wash them out than have them get killed. I don't know what happened to the other three. And he said, I'd have soloed you right now, but I can't. He said, I'm supposed to fly with you 10 hours, and you don't have 10 hours. I said, yes, sir, I know that. Well, then I went before, quote-unquote, which was nothing more than, or nothing less than a court-martial. And what happened there, I let go. But I sat in the Airman's Club in the telephone booth, and I had the money to call. I had two places I could have called. I could have called the guard here in Peoria and Colonel Norman or one of the other high officers that I'd already flown with would have come down and given me a flight test. Or I could call the Pentagon and have Bill come down. So I sat in there. My buddy came in and he said, have you made the call yet? I said, no. I picked my money up, stuck in my pocket. I said, I'm going to let the cards fall where they may. Well, unfortunately or fortunately, I got washed out. And they offered me a permanent direct commission, which you only get through the Air Force Academy. And they said, we'll give you that commission immediately. I said, sir, I have one question to ask. He said, yes, you may. I said, if I accept this commission, can I get back into flying? Absolutely not. I said, thank you, sir. You answered my question. I reject the offer for the commission. The base commander said, Mr. Cliff, do you know what you turned down? I said, yes, sir. He said, would you explain to us what you turned down? I said, a second lieutenant of the direct commission has the same power as a captain with a reserve commission. He said, that's true. And he said, you're turning that down? I said, yes, sir. I said, if I can't fly here, I'll go fly civilian. Well, that's all behind us. Anyhow, this is the kind of stuff that takes place, and people have no idea. So I'm going to cut off now. Hope I didn't bore anybody.
Interesting. Anyone have any questions, comments, thoughts, ideas? Okay, I'm going to turn off the recording.